Over the years, one of the most common questions I have received is about the role of fevers. Often this has been in the form of, are fevers bad for us? Or how should I treat a fever and rash in my child? When I was training as a doctor, we were taught to view fevers as a red flag, something that meant the body was in trouble and was potentially in a fight for its life. But is this really true? Unfortunately, fevers have been over-medicalized, and mainstream medicine does not appreciate their true role and how they should be managed. So let's have a look at some of the most important things you need to know about fevers, and make sure you hang around until the end, when I'll have an update on our new book, which not only covers fevers, but is packed full of all the health wisdom you'll ever need. First of all, what does fever mean? Essentially, it means an elevation of body temperature. The medical dictionary states that a fever is any body temperature elevation over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, 37.8 degrees Celsius. The temperature level is somewhat arbitrary, but in my book, 37.8 degrees Celsius is a reasonable cutoff. In some of my previous videos, I have discussed how case numbers of claimed specific diseases such as monkeypox have been manipulated by declaring that 37.4 degrees Celsius or 99.3 degrees Fahrenheit constitutes a fever. In old times, fevers were diagnosed by touching a patient's body, for example their forehead, but these days it is generally done with a thermometer. Electronic ear canal units are now readily available and are a useful addition to our home first aid kit. The medical dictionary goes on to state that a healthy person's body temperature fluctuates between 97 degrees Fahrenheit or 36.1 degrees Celsius and 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 37.8 degrees Celsius, with the average being 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit or 37 degrees Celsius. An increased temperature is the response a healthy person makes to correct a condition in the body. It serves a vital function in the maintenance of long-term health. However, the medical establishment has a dim view of fevers. When I was a medical student, we were expected to memorize hundreds, if not thousands, of what we were told were specific disease entities that could cause fevers. Today's doctors and nurses are generally trained to believe that fevers are a red flag that often need to be investigated with a large number of tests and then combated with pharmaceuticals. When I was a hospital doctor, some of the ward nurses would page me urgently to take blood cultures if a patient's temperature hit 38.5 degrees or 101.3 degrees Fahrenheit. However, if the patient's temperature was 38.4 or 101.1 degrees Fahrenheit, then they didn't expect me to take blood cultures. It had nothing to do with their overall condition. It was all based on an arbitrary temperature cutoff. The medical dictionary then goes off the rails when it states that fevers are primarily caused by viral or bacterial infections, such as pneumonia or influenza. Here they are getting into germ theory nonsense by blaming conditions on microbes. It doesn't matter whether they are known to exist, such as bacteria, or not shown to exist, such as viruses. It is fallacious to blame microbes as the cause of illness. If you are not yet familiar with this issue, you can watch my video, Germ Theory versus Terrain Theory. This is an area where mainstream medicine has to make up fairy tales about the role of fever. For example, when they say, fever is an important component of the immune response, though its role is not completely understood. Physicians believe that an elevated body temperature has several effects. The immune system chemicals that react with the fever-inducing agent and trigger the resetting of the thermostat also increase the production of cells that fight off the invading bacteria or viruses. First of all, there is no invasion going on, and as I mentioned, you can watch some of my other videos about germ theory, where I explain this fallacy. Second, they make up a story about magical chemicals reacting with their imagined invaders in order to make some cells to fight them.
Alrighty then.
Then go on to say, higher temperature also inhibit the growth of some bacteria. The problem with this idea is that increased temperatures increase the growth of some bacteria. Not to mention the fact that microbes are hardly going to stop what they are doing due to a 1 to 2 degree change in temperature. They continue with the storytelling by stating, "In addition, the increased heart rate that may accompany the changes in blood circulation also speeds the arrival of white blood cells to the sites of infection." This is really clutching at straws. Each mil of blood contains thousands of white cells, and the limiting factor is not the speed at which they are travelling. Even at rest, the equivalent of our entire circulating volume passes through the heart every minute or so. Even on their own mistaken terms that the white cells are, quote, fighting the alleged invaders, the heart doesn't need to speed up, as there are already white cells everywhere. As a side point, the medical system claims that a high white cell count detected in the blood is evidence of an alleged invasion by microbes. While it may be true that there is an inflammatory response taking place in the body, any microbes present are not the cause of the original problem. It is even possible to stimulate huge increases in white blood cell counts by giving pharmaceuticals such as steroids, showing that microbes are not required. The CDC Yellow Book, Health Information for International Travel, is another publication that promotes terror to those travelling around the world. Chapter 11, Post-Travel Evaluation, contains a section on fever. They say that fever commonly accompanies serious illness in returned travellers, and the most common life-threatening tropical disease associated with fever in returned travellers is malaria. This is simply scaremongering. I can tell you firsthand that New Zealanders are well known for travelling around the world, and despite plenty developing fevers, virtually none get close to having serious, let alone life-threatening illnesses. It is a different story if you move into an area for months or more at a time, because then you are exposed to potential environmental toxins that will eventually make you sick. The CDC go on to say that the initial focus in evaluating a febrile returned traveller should be on identifying infections that are possibly life-threatening, treatable, or transmissible. Again, this is pure fear-mongering and a backwards way of looking at things through the distorted germ theory lens. Firstly, implying to someone that their fever could be life-threatening is likely to have very negative health consequences in itself. Then focusing on identifying, quote, infections leads them down the garden path with a variety of tests that may be positive but do not reveal the underlying cause of disease. I can give you my own first-hand experience from around a decade ago during one of my pregnancies. I developed a low-grade fever and was, quote, tested for toxoplasmosis, which came back positive. This, of course, caused a great panic because of the so-called risk of congenital toxoplasmosis. However, no Toxoplasma gondii was ever isolated and found to be invading my body. The diagnosis was based on antibodies detected in my blood. I won't get into antibodies in detail here because they have been covered at other times, including the series I made on the Perth groups, the yin and yang of HIV. Suffice to say, the detection of various proteins called antibodies in an assay does not mean that you are, quote, infected with anything. The CDC goes on to provide a table of clinical findings and select associated infectious diseases. Many of these concern entities that have never been shown to exist as claimed, including HIV, Zika, and, quote, viral hepatitis. They are the invisible scapegoats, imagined viruses, that are erroneously blamed for various body conditions or test results. The reason for fevers has actually been known for a very long time. They are nature's efforts to cure and are part of the healing crises our bodies experience. There is no need to look through a reductionist lens that attempts to find answers in cells and molecules. A healing crisis is coordinated at a higher level. However, the medical system has created an industry around fever that involves largely redundant investigations and potentially dangerous interventions. Fevers are part of the body's eliminative strategy, which is why they are often accompanied by a variety of other processes. Dr. Ulrich Williams wrote in the 1930s that fever, caused by fermentation of stored up waste, is nature's bonfire. The tongue becomes coated, signifying the condition of inner surfaces and linings, which, like the outer skin, are being used for elimination. The breath becomes foul because an assortment of putrid material is being thrown out through the lungs and linings of the breathing passages and apparatus. Sputum is sometimes copious when mucus filth is extruded. Antra and sinuses may become choked for a time. Skin eruptions, boils, rashes, and carbuncles may appear, or deeper seated abscesses when waste is concentrated in organs, cavities, or connective tissue planes. Volumes of fetid filth are sometimes thrown out through the liver or lining of stomach and vomited up. Diarrhea is the usual mode of ejecting irritant substances excreted through intestinal glands or mucosa. The urinary tract may exhibit signs of disturbance, pain, aching, frequency, burning, urgency, inflammation in kidneys, ureters, bladder, or urethra. The urine is likely to be loaded with solid matter in solution or suspension, and if the poisons are highly toxic in character, there may be temporary damage to tissue. Purulent or mucus discharge from the vagina is common, with accompanying symptoms of deeper discomfort. Such are the evidences that nature is now prepared to throw out, in bulk, poisons which hitherto she had been trying to eliminate piecemeal. This sort of wisdom has been ignored by allopathic medicine, which has created endless disease classifications linked to fever. It is a false paradigm, as the entities do not exist. Instead, the body has various ways of responding to toxic insults, and fever aids in the eliminative process. Fevers are not to be feared or suppressed. They are to be welcomed as a sign that the body is correcting its status, and these processes need to be encouraged. Then, with proper reflection, it is often possible to identify the real underlying causes of why the body ended up that way. Mainstream medicine will often prescribe drugs that reduce fevers, but this is almost always a bad idea. There may be a case for such interventions in some extreme circumstances, such as hyperpyrexia or temperatures above 41 degrees Celsius or 105.8 degrees Fahrenheit. But this is incredibly rare. In fact, I don't recall seeing one case in my 16-year practicing career. Virtually all fevers can be managed at home and without drugs. To aid the body's eliminative processes during times of fever, it is best to fast. Fluids can be taken copiously in the form of purified water and dilute citrus or fruit drinks. Ideally, source your own citrus fruit to make freshly squeezed beverages. The same fasting process applies for children. Typically, they only require a brief fast, and it can be done safely at a young age. For example, one of our sons was unwell with a fever for the first time in his life at around 14 months of age. He had a two-day fast, consuming just dilute fruit juices, then flushed out a huge bowel motion and quickly returned to health. With more serious conditions in adults, a more prolonged fast is required. In the worst case, this could be for several months. These sorts of situations often require additional supplementation with bone broths, raw milk, and vitamin B compounds. We'll get into the details of how to do these types of fasts in the future. In the meantime, the whole idea during a fever is to flush as much waste as possible from the body. The fasting and increased fluid consumption helps to clean the system, not only through the urine and feces, but also through the skin. Sometimes enemas are required if the bowels are still sluggish, and it will never cease to amaze how clogged up people can get. Sweating is fine, as the skin is using this mechanism to get rid of toxins. So during fevers, wear light, non-occlusive clothing. Kids are more likely than adults to get rashes during these episodes, as their smaller and younger bodies favour the skin's excretory mechanism. Again, allopathic medicine has attempted to label these rashes with names such as measles or hand, foot, and mouth disease. They are all simply on a spectrum of a bodily condition that requires an eliminatory response. You will see claims that those with such rashes are highly contagious due to the fluid coming out of their body, including the skin. The claim of contagion, however, is false. How do I know? Because my husband Mark and I have extensively researched the scientific literature surrounding these conditions, including the original papers making the claims. You can check out my videos on conditions such as chickenpox and herpes for more details about how contagion has never been shown to occur by any natural route. I'm not saying that the fluids are not toxic. The body is trying to eject them after all. As Ulrich Williams emphatically stated, sometimes we are talking about volumes of fetid filth that need to be expelled. On that note, I'm pleased to announce that Dr. Williams' wisdom is about to go back into publication, and next week I'll be launching our new book, Terrain Therapy. His work from the mid-1900s is so brilliant that we hardly had to change a thing. I've written a foreword and added a few updates, but most of his wisdom is beautifully timeless. The doctor the establishment tried to suppress last century is about to reach more people than ever before, and I'm sure many of you will find it one of the best books on health you will ever read. Stay tuned for next week's announcement on how you can get a copy of Terrain Therapy in hardcover, paperback, or an ebook just in time for Christmas. And with regard to fever and alleged germs, I'll give him the last word with another snippet from the book. If germs are so terrible, why do these acute so-called infective disorders yield so dramatically to fasting and simple elimination? If the germ were the relevant factor, fasting would surely be fatal. Appreciation of this point will soon close our fever traps. Dr. Ulrich Williams. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com